So,
what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Is there a foolproof way for women to get a second date without texting the guy the next day? Things have gotten pretty heated in the world of text conversations, whether you're dating, married, or just talking to a friend, and it's really starting to confuse things in terms of dating relationships, the art of the chase, and the art of being chased. So joining me a little later today will be Christina Pineda. She's the co-founder of Matchmakers in the City. She's a celebrity matchmaker, matchmaking royals, and also us normal folk. But they've been featured on numerous mainstream television shows in Hollywood, E! News, you name it, they've been there. But Christina Pineda is always here with her faithful Catholic perspective as a matchmaker as well to give us her advice. We'll also talk about the question of whether or not pornography is cheating. If you have a question during the show, you can head over to my Instagram page. You can find me by going to relevantradio.com/trending. And on the right-hand side, you can connect on Instagram and even ask a question live during the show. I put a question box up there on my story about today's topic. Also, you can give us a call at 1-888-914-9149. Today, we celebrate Our Lady of Fatima yet again, and here's why. If you don't know this, from May 13th until October 13th, many years ago, back at the beginning of the 20th century, Our Lady appeared to three young children, and she appeared to them once a month. Over the course of those months, the last of the apparitions was October 13th. It wasn't very long ago that Our Lady appeared to these three young visionaries, one of whom is Sister Lucia, the last of the three visionaries to die, and she wrote copiously about the visions that Our Lady ended up giving to her and the two other visionaries, along with other visions that were given to Sister Lucia. It's fascinating because if you didn't know this, I hadn't been aware of the fact that, in fact, Our Lady and Jesus himself separately appeared to Sister Lucia a number of times even after the apparitions, the beginning of the 20th century. In fact, Sister Lucia was appeared to by an angel before the apparitions even began. It's quite amazing that this young child would have Our Lady appear to her. 8 years after the original apparition, so that would be in 1925, the first apparitions occurred in 1917. But in 1925, Our Lady appeared again to Lucia, this time with a child Jesus by her side, calling for that devotion of the seven Saturday devotions. Then in 1926, just a year later, Lucia received another apparition of just the child Jesus asking if she, Sister Lucia, had spread the devotion of the first five Saturdays to the Immaculate Heart of his mother. Then again in 1929, Our Lady appeared again to Lucia, calling for the consecration of Russia to her Immaculate Heart. What is it about Our Lady's Immaculate Heart that is so important? Why can't we just go directly to Jesus? We'll talk about that in just a second. But I have to tell you, the thing that has stood out the most to me over the years in following the story and the impact of Our Lady of Fatima has actually had to do with the vision of hell that Jacinta, Lucia, and Francisco received. In fact, Our Lady, if we read directly from the third memoir of Sister Lucia, it said that Our Lady showed us a large sea of fire which seemed to be beneath the earth. Plunged in this fire were the demons and the souls who were like embers, transparent in black or bronze or colored in human form. She then, when discussing this vision of hell that these three young children received from the Blessed Virgin Mary, she talks about shrieks and groans of sorrow and despair, which horrified us and caused us to quake with fear. What is hell? Hell's eternal separation from God. It's utter despair and chaos in that separation. It's a mourning of that separation, and it's fascinating because after the death of two of the visionaries, the brother and sister Jacinta and Francisco, priests, bishops, and popes would ask and cross-examine Sister Lucia, saying, tell us more about the visions of Fatima. Tell us more. Are you sure you've told us everything? Because it's believed that, and known, in fact, that Sister Lucia was instructed to just reveal a little bit at a time. She was being obedient to our Lord Jesus Christ and the Blessed Virgin Mary and these great gifts of the visions that she had received. Now, on one instance, Jacinta, in actually many instances, would often focus on reparation and how important it was they made reparation for the sins of others. In fact, Sister Lucia would talk about how Jacinta would repeatedly be on her knees praying that prayer that you may or may not know is tagged onto part of the rosary. Oh my Jesus, forgive us our sins. Save us from the fires of hell. Lead all souls to heaven, especially those most in need of thy mercy. That was a prayer given by Our Lady to the young visionaries to be prayed regularly. Now Jacinta would stay on her knees for long periods of time praying that prayer. And then Lucia says, almost as if Jacinta was waking her and Francisco up, she'd call to them and say, Francisco, Francisco, are you praying with me? We need to pray a great deal to save the souls from hell. So many are going there. So many. And she'd even ask Lucia, why didn't you tell Our Lady to show hell to those people? Lucia would repeat, I forgot. And Jacinta would agree, she also didn't remember. Because Jacinta believed so intensely that if only people would see the same vision of hell, they would amend their life. They would change how they lived. When talking about Jacinta in this third memoir, Sister Lucia said that Jacinta, even when she was very ill, would still go to daily mass. And Lucia said to her, Jacinta, don't. You aren't able. And it's not Sunday today. You want to know what Jacinta's response was, even in the midst of her illness? It doesn't matter. I will go for sinners who don't even go on Sundays. She took very seriously the call, the Immaculate Heart of Mary, to turn to Our Lady in her Immaculate Heart. You're listening to Trending with Timory. Why, as we remember the feast of Our Lady of Fatima yet again today on October 13th, why is it that the Immaculate Heart has been emphasized as so important? Can't we just go directly to Jesus? Well, in the apparition that took place on June 13th, 1917, Our Lady told Lucia never to forsake the Immaculate Heart, that it would be her refuge and road which would lead her to God. See, the whole point of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, to pray for Our Lady's intercession, is to be directed to a deeper relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, ultimately culminating in union with Him in heaven. Now, Our Lady, on June 13th, 1917, actually opened her hands and pierced the hearts of the three young visionaries with her palms. Light came from her palms. Now, Lucia says the first purpose of this light was to give them a special knowledge and love for the Immaculate Heart of Mary. But there were other two cute things to remember. It gave them a better knowledge of God, and also of the mystery of the Holy Trinity. You see, Our Lady does nothing but direct us to our Lord Jesus Christ. Jacinta said, the Lady said that her Immaculate Heart was your refuge and the road which will lead you to God. Aren't you thrilled? Her heart is so good, and I love it. We're often told in the Gospels by our Lord Jesus Christ to become like little children. There's so much to be learned but from the three visionaries, two of whom died at a very young age, about becoming those little children and believing and trusting in what our Lord Jesus Christ teaches us and calls us to, but also those messengers that He sends our way to bring about not only our conversion, but our intercession for the conversion of our loved ones and even strangers. You're listening to Trending with Timory. My guest today is Christina Pineda, and we're going to talk about two topics. One, a little later on, whether or not watching pornography is cheating. And second, we're going to talk about dating and texting etiquette. What should and shouldn't be said via text message? We tend to say and do things we would probably never say or do if we were face to face. This is complicated and even impacted dating relationships as to who asks who out. So here's your how-to on texting etiquette with Christina Pineda, co-founder of Matchmakers in the City, an old school matchmaking company. Welcome to the show, Christina.
Thanks, Timory. Great to be here.
Let's go ahead and dive in. Here's the first rule that you sent me about texting and dating. And I think it's so important because we're in the midst where we don't know the art of the chase anymore or how to be chased in a relationship. And we're texting and communicating when we should and shouldn't be. So number one rule, what should people do after a first date?
Yeah, so this one is pretty controversial. And it's, we ask the question is, should a woman reach out after the first date or reach out first in general? Alessandra, actually, my sister and co-founder of Matchmakers in the City, posted this question on her Instagram, and she got a lot of responses from women saying things like, life is too short, I should be able to reach out when I want to a man. And I hear from a lot of women who I date coach that they don't want to be fake. They want to be able to say what's on their mind and not play games. But there are other ways of showing interest without texting him the next day. The reason why it is women should not text or reach out after the first date is because it comes off too strong, and you want the man to be in the driver's seat and pursuing the relationship. Otherwise, they lose interest and become passive. This is hard for us strong-willed women to hear because we are used to just doing everything during the day and being so productive and efficient that we want to be able to do that in our love lives too. But there, it's starkly different. That's why we say switch off your daytime switch when you're thinking about dating and put on your flip on the nighttime switch where you're more, you let the man lead and take, let that femininity and more just relaxed way about you come out. Alessandra responded to these Instagram people reaching out to her saying that she's all for expressing yourself as a woman, but from 9 years of the professional matchmaking experience that we've had, she's seen that women reaching out just doesn't work. And this is part of the way that we're seeing things in our culture, which is very relativistic, that, and Timory talked about relativism a few days ago, that relativism doesn't even work in dating. Men are wired in a certain way and women are wired in a different way. And unless we understand this in dating, it makes things very complicated and you're probably going to have a lot more heartbreak along the way.
So we have to recognize the bottom line, men and women are different. And this matters mm-hmm. in terms of how we interact in dating relationships. It sounds to me so often that you're having to provide those distinctions in your date coaching and matchmaking work. So what are men and women to do and how do you show interest without texting the guy the next day?
Right. And this is where the foolproof way of women getting a second date without texting him the next day comes into play. And that's why it's not women being totally passive, but it's channeling your energy into a different place so you're not pursuing him. And the best way to do that is to wait until the end of the date, let him walk you to your car or whatever, however it ends, let him say what he wants to say, and then say these. We have a three-tier way of doing this. So you want to first thank him so much for the date. It was so much fun. So you want to make sure you establish that you appreciate him, and men appreciation is huge for them. So thank you so much. Tell him that you had a great time, even if it was lukewarm or boring. Just practice. ladies, because as I said, I have say this over and over again, unless you're repulsed, you want to go on a second date, because a lot of times men's personality doesn't come out on the first date.
Right.
And then
give
so
them a chance,
the,
ladies, give them a chance.
Yes. Yes. And we so easily will swipe over someone because of, we think that they should be perfect and we think they should be so charismatic, but the really good guys are the ones who may not be perfect on a first date. And that's actually a good sign. So you want to appreciate, thank you so much, I had a great time. Then you want to give him the clincher. I would love to do this again. Let me know. Those three words will let win you the second date if it's meant to be. If it's not meant to be, then he knows that it's the ball's in his court. I do tell women to sometimes you want to be a little more straightforward because men can be simple and dense. I love men. I don't mean to be a criticism, but they're very straightforward generally. And you want to explain, you might want to explain to them that you're more old school, more old fashioned, more traditional, enter whatever word you want to use here, that you like the man to reach out first. You're not going to be texting him, but if he wants to see you again, you'd love to, and for him to just let you know. So I would encourage any woman who wants to spell it out, be as explicit as possible. But those phrases at the end of the date are so important because you firmly place the ball in his court. And he knows if he's interested in you, he needs to reach out. There's no gray area there.
Right.
If he's not sure, then you have to deal with the drama of, oh, should I text him the next day? What should I do? And there's a lot more. That is a whole separate topic to dive into. But these, if you say what I just told you in your own words, getting across the themes for each of those phrases, you're going to be golden. And if it's in God's plan, you will get a second date.
Okay, so just to repeat, ladies, this is your foolproof way of getting a second date. Thank him for the date. So you're giving some affirmation to the time spent together. Tell him you had a great time. Perhaps maybe even highlighting a key thing you enjoyed. That way you're not necessarily faking it. And then three, let them know, I would love to do this again. You let me know. That way the ball's clearly in their court. You've made your move without being the one who's hunting, but being hunted instead.
Mm-hmm. That's said beautifully, Timory.
Okay, so let's play a little bit more into the male-female dynamic and also some general guidelines for texting. First, I have to touch on this because you posted a couple weeks ago on your Instagram story. You admitted that you actually had to train your own husband while dating with some texting etiquette. So do tell.
Yes, he was great. But my husband, like a lot of men, he's more of the 80% of men who are less communicative than 20% of men are a lot more communicative and will be texting all the time. 80%ers are the guys who maybe will check in with each other every month. How are the kids? How's your job? Good, great. That's more of Dan's relationship with his friends. So with texting, he wasn't a big texter, and I was used to a lot of men who would be love bombing me with texting in the beginning, and I needed to get used to that. And he even told me he was bad at texting, but this was after a few dates, and I was thinking, okay, this man is not interested in me. So that is something for men especially to know. And it wasn't the problem, he was really interested, but he thought, okay, we set a date. He's a very reliable person, and when he makes a plan, he doesn't change it. And for me, though, I would get nervous. I was thinking, I didn't hear from him. Is this plan still happening? And for him, it was. But that's why men, if you tend to be more of the Dan 80%er guy, make sure that you are texting enough so that she knows that you're still alive.
See, I think the role was reversed between my husband and I. When he was, like, pursuing me, he kept texting me, and I just kept ignoring him. And even to this day, my sister, I think, recently saw my phone, and she was, like, trying to text something to my husband. She's like, you don't text your husband. He makes fun of me all the time. He's like, you sound mean when you text, because it's, like, simple, blunt, like, almost, like, not even small talk. Let's just get through it.
That is funny. That definitely rolls a reverse with us. That's great.
Okay, these should be simple answers, but I think we can always use a reminder. Should men ask women out via text, phone call, or in person?
Yes, I think you should start planning the second date on the first date as a man so you can gauge her reactions too and start being listening to what she says and do a little treasure hunt so you'll know what a fun second date would be for her. I think that you can drop the hint then, and then you can say, then I always say for men, ask her to text you when she gets home to make sure she arrived safely. She might forget.
That's a good one.
Yo, it's so nice. I know. Oh, yeah. It's so good. But sometimes women forget. I forgot a bunch of times when I was dating Dan. So don't take that personally. The next day, send
her
a text.
Or is a sign that it's a no.
Oh, yeah. Right. But I don't want them to get too caught up with that because we get busy. We go home and we have to walk our dogs and all of that. So don't take it too personally. But definitely the next day, reach out via text saying you had a great time. It was so nice to meet you. I'll give you a call sometime this week to plan a second date. Then she doesn't know when you're going to call, so she gets a little excited and nervous. Call on a Tuesday, Wednesday latest. Then you're golden. That's the best way that I've seen, because then she's not freaked out by you calling her immediately after having your date.
That's Christina Pineda of Matchmakers in the City. You can find them. We've tagged them on social media just at irrelevantradio.com/trending, where you can sign up to get more about Matchmakers in the City. We'll be back talking about whether or not porn is cheating. Watching porn, that is.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
If you haven't heard, don't remind my husband because I'll make the poor guy nervous. But tomorrow on Trending, he's actually going to be joining me for the show. We'll be talking about masculinity, St. Joseph, and a couple other really fun topics. So join me as my husband and I sit down here on Trending. Before we dive into this next topic of whether or not watching porn is cheating, I want to throw it out there. If you or someone you know is struggling with a porn addiction or just want to reduce your exposure, these are two great resources. Our friend Jim O'Day, as you know from here on Trending, heads up the organization Integrity Restored that can help you in battling a porn addiction or helping a friend who is. Also, to reduce your exposure or fight that porn addiction, it's important to check out Screen Accountability Filtration Software. So you can find them at covenanteyes.com. Just head over to my Twitter feed where we are posting links to that right now. You can find me at Timmerie. That's Timmerie. Christina Pineda, our resident matchmaker here, she's a co-founder of Matchmakers in the City, an old school matchmaking firm. Now, Christina, you and your sister recently had a debate on your podcast, Dating in the City, about whether or not pornography was cheating, and you were slightly taken aback when she said she didn't think it was cheating. So let's unpack this, especially because so many women are actually told by their gynecologists to look at pornography.
Yeah, exactly. And aside from, so it definitely, watching porn is definitely cheating. And aside from the fact that it usually leads to addiction, because most sins do, most bad sins, I mean, all sins are bad, but they do, you're deliberately cheating on your partner and watching others engage in the activities reserved for marriage. So just please know that don't use it as what a lot of gynecologists will give the advice that if intimacy is painful for the woman or they need help getting turned on, gynecologists will say, oh yeah, just watch porn, it's fine. But it's actually a terrible sin that leads to addiction. And there's many other ways of getting the instructional help that you need for intimacy, as well as the setting the mood for intimacy that we will talk about. But I think that my debate with my sister really forefronted the fact that a lot of people don't think there's a problem with it, that pornography is really widespread. And then unless we talk about it and unless we really look into what's going on, that it's something that many people will continue to use, or new people continue to use. Mm-hmm. And another great resource is Matt Frad, who wrote for Catholic Answers about how pornography reduces the mystery and beauty of a man or a woman to a collection of body parts to be used rather than recognizing them as persons to be loved. It reduces the great mystery and sanctity of human sexuality to a trivial activity that need not be of any real importance. And that mystery that he talks about, he repeats it twice, that is actually creating that mystery in your relationship, is actually one of the antidotes to creating that space for a beautiful, intimate relationship with your spouse.
Christina, I want to cover a couple of things here. And if you're just joining us, that's Christina Pineda from Matchmakers in the City. You're listening to Trending with Timmery here on Relevant Radio. A lot of people don't understand why pornography is cheating or why it can be an addiction, because it's actually a really dangerous possible addiction. So just to cover it really quick, porn is cheating because you're creating an emotional and chemical bond with images on a screen. Here's how. Those same chemicals that are released when you engage in sexual intimacy. And by the way, little ears warning, I forgot to throw it out there. Just a heads up, if there are young ears, be sure to listen to this podcast later on. You can find it by heading over to relevantradio.com/trending, where you can subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. You name it, we're there. But here's how. Certain chemicals are released to give you a sense of alertness and a sharp focus within intimacy. Some of them also include dopamine. We talked about dopamine this week on the show as well. But in intimacy, there's this sense of pleasure high. And it leaks to remember to kind of get your fix for it, which can be caused by creating that connection with pornography. Norepinephrine gives that brain this attitude of to prepare for something that's important that's about to happen. Oxytocin and vasopressin bind memories to the person or thing you're engaging with. And endorphins give you a pleasure high, while serotonin gives you the sense of calm and relaxation. All of these things are great, but you're creating these chemical bonds and multiple different connectors in your brain with intimacy in the wrong context, with an image or video on a computer screen. Now, this is great because it can actually bond us to our spouse to help create a lasting relationship. That's one of the great gifts of sex within marriage. But it can work against us if we take it outside of marriage. Any sexual activity outside of marriage, including porn, has led to increase in depression. Not the closeness of marriage is meant to bring about unconditional love and affirmation. And so these highs and lows and these sense of alertness that comes with pornography exposure really is a deal breaker for intimacy down the road. We could talk about erectile dysfunction and other things, but really it's feeding a need for a connection of intimacy in the wrong ways, not with real people. And so that's why it is actually a form of cheating. So Christina, let's unpack this just a little bit more. Have you seen this as a problem with some of your clients?
Yes, I think that it's just so much more common, and they'll bring it up to me, but then we'll discuss what we just talked about. And then they'll start to, at first there's the resistance to change, and there's almost like what we were talking about on the podcast, that there's this resistance. And then little by little, as we talk about it, they will see the truth. So I see a lot of healing in working with our members and reclaiming their sexuality from, it's almost been taken from them in the culture and how prevalent pornography is. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a really healing way of working with people and doing our sessions to shed light on the truth. And then also I'll recommend different Catholic books on sex and intimacy. We've talked about a few on the show before for more of the how-to elements of intimacy, because a lot of people are just have no idea and want to make sure they're prepared, which is good when you're preparing for marriage. And then for how to get turned on, and for that, for if someone is already married, what we'll talk about is creating the real mystery in their relationship. And this is especially common for people who, I get a lot of people say, okay, we're married, we're living together, obviously, and we're working together now because of COVID, and we have to stay in the same house. So what are ways of increasing that mystery and intimacy? So I'll give them a few practical points of how to do that in their marriage.
What are those practical points to help keep that alive?
Yeah, so the first one is to treat each other like you're still dating. One of the ways to do that is, and these are material ways of doing this. Timory talked about spiritual ways of not getting lazy in your marriage. This is material. So you want to dress up for each other. Wear your best. Save the slouchy looks and ugly colors for when you're home alone. I know I do that. The really comfy things. Save it for when you're alone. And also in her book, For Women Only, Shanti Feldman says how important it is for women to continue to take care of themselves even after marriage. And right. It's a great book. I like to recommend that the married women who I relationship coach to do their makeup twice a week, even if it's in the car as your husband is driving, so that you bring that sense of dating back into your marriage. It's so easy to think, oh, now we're married, I don't have to do my makeup anymore. But men really take pride out of the women who they marry. And it's just such a lovely thing to do for yourself and for your husband. And some other things that you can do: wear perfume, cologne, use breath mints, deodorant, shower. This seems simple, but and then if you don't like the cologne that your husband wears, take him shopping for a cologne that you do like. These ways help you not to get too comfortable in your marriage. And some things that people can do: not treating your house like a frat house or a locker room. And this is a little more for the men. I know that this sounds obvious, but you want to keep your bodily functions to yourself. So if you wouldn't do it at church, don't do it in front of your spouse. So for instance, burping, passing gas, speaking with your mouth full, basic etiquette that we learned for a reason. But unfortunately in marriage, it's so easy to think, oh, we're comfortable, we can just be easy with each other. But those are really important ways of just keeping that mystery alive.
Romance killers. Right. It's true. Even if you're comfortable with people, like, there are certain things that just, you know, they're not going to enhance the mystery and the intimacy and the thoughtfulness. There's simple tricks that are there. And I'm laughing at your makeup one, because we were traveling over the weekend and I lost my makeup somewhere between one of the cars, doing my makeup in the car and the house. I've not found it. So I've been makeupless all week, but I'm like, okay, Christina, I should probably go find that at some point.
Oh, poor Tori. But then it's just obviously you can't help that, but it's just those little things that your spouse will appreciate. And they seem small, but they make a huge difference. And also for men, my two last things are men to set the mood, have a glass of wine together, dim the lights, light candles, put some jazz music on. You want her to feel just special and taken care of and protected and safe and sweet, and that you're romancing her, because romance is so important. And the last step is to go out together, go dancing, experience different places, travel, plan trips. These are all wonderful ways of increasing romance and mystery in your relationship that Shanti Feldman does talk about a little bit in her book as well.
That's Christina Pineda from Matchmakers in the City here on Trending with Tim Rain. Thank you so much for being with us, Christina. We'll talk again real soon. And I just have a final thought on this as we're tying this big picture of keeping that intimacy in relationship and mystery alive in your relationship. I keep thinking of the words of now St. John Paul the Great, St. John Paul II, when he wrote in Love and Responsibility, "The problem with porn isn't that it shows too much, it's that it shows too little." And this is the same thing within marriage, I would almost say. It's that we don't get to know each other when we're kind of hiding behind pornography, our texting, our lack of kind of thoughtfulness toward one another. We don't really get to know each other when we become lazy, turning to bad habits, whatever they might be. We want to dive deeper into that personal dimension, whether we're dating or married, and continue to keep that mystery and discovery of the other person alive. We'll be right back here on Trending with Tim Wright. You can find Matchmakers in the City by heading over to matchmakersinthecity.com.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Tim Wright on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We're back, and as you may know, we have a book giveaway. Vote Your Conscience, our executive director, Father Rocky, has written this free ebook available for you. And it's important at this time, the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops have emphasized that the threat of abortion remains our preeminent priority because it directly attacks life itself, because it places within the sanctuary of the family, and because of the number of lives it destroyed. There are many topics that come to the forefront of thought with regard to voting. Moral and religious liberty issues directly impact the family and our ability to worship. Even the economy and work environment can place serious burdens on individuals and families, as well as roadblocks for living out basic family duties and just fundamental dimensions of our vocation, especially for spouses and parents. So our executive director, Father Rocky, is joining me now to discuss his new free ebook, Vote Your Conscience. Thank you for joining me, Father Rocky.
Hey, it's great to be on your show, Tim. I love listening to your show. I tell all my friends about you, and you're a big hit coast to coast. And you're right. You've got a free book there. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com/, I think it's vote, and you can download this ebook. Because when we sent out the book, Mary at the Crossroads of History, kind of took a long time to get the physical copy in people's hands. We said, we don't have that time, so you're going to make it as an electronic book. You can get it on your smartphone. You can get it on your laptop, your desktop, your tablet, your Kindle. It's about 110 pages or so. And I think people will get a lot out of it because our conscience is our guide, but we need to form our conscience. And that's what the book is all about. So we talk about the Ten Commandments that God gave us, the words of Jesus in the scriptures and the gospel, the teachings of the church, the importance of prayer and sacraments, the final chapters on religion and politics. And I like, Timory, how you focused on what the U.S. bishops said last year in November at their annual meeting, that the threat of abortion remains our preeminent priority. For a variety of reasons, but I think the most convincing reason is because of the number of lives destroyed. In the political debate, whether it's in the middle or on one side or the other, there is a common theme, it seems to me, in every position or issue, and that is people of goodwill want to do something that's going to help people, right? That seems to be the driving issue. And that's why we have elected leaders to guard what we call the common good. And I think everyone will agree the most important good is the right to life, and that innocent lives should be protected. Now, there's some extreme philosophers who won't embrace that, right? And they have serious problems in understanding human rights, right? They're opposed to human rights. Their approach to the political process is might makes right. And that's a very vicious way to live. You know, it's kind of like Darwin's survival of the fittest. but really a much better basis for moral and natural law in the political arena is to recognize the dignity and sanctity of every human life from the moment of conception to natural death. And that's one of the reasons I'm so proud to be a Roman Catholic. In spite of all of the scandals and all of the sins and all the other stuff that we all know about, you know, the Catholic Church has been just absolutely fabulous over these past 50 years and throughout the last 2,000 years, defending the dignity of every human person. Even if they're born with Down syndrome, even if our country right. or culture says they're not useful, mm-hmm. you know, even the older people who need a hand, we champion, we're the champion for the weak and the vulnerable, all of them. And right. so to me, you know, the most convincing part of the United States bishops' argument of why abortion is a preeminent priority in this, of all the priorities, right, taking care of the aged, taking care of the poor, taking care of the marginalized, taking care of the refugees who are desperate, taking care of, you know, whatever you want to call it, the environment or the economy or healthcare. In spite of all that, the bishops point out wisely, it's the number of lives destroyed by abortion, which is anywhere from 600,000 to a million every year. Just try to put this into context. When, and you might not even been born yet on 9/11 in 2000.
Father, I was born for 9/11.
Were you born? All right. Yes. I didn't know if you were born yet. All right. But everybody remembers that moment. And it was shocking because 3,000 defenseless, innocent American citizens died, you know, in at Ground Zero in New York City, in the Pentagon in Washington, in that jet that crashed in the fields of Pennsylvania. We were all horrified. 3,000 people died in that terrorist activity. And you know what, Timory? You know how many people die in abortion every day in this country?
Almost 3,000. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, well, every day.
A year.
Yeah. Every day it's a 9/11 for the yeah. unborn children who don't have a voice. So that's kind of what
so
I tease
about,
out here.
Right. And there's so much about those numbers we don't know, and we don't even talk about the impact on the woman, the father. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are just numbers. It doesn't even touch on the long-term impact that people
that's
are
right.
carrying for many, many years. I think
and
of
the succeeding generations.
Right. Right. I think mm-hmm. of loved ones, even now, in kind of the final stages of their life and how they're carrying the pain of that abortion. And yet people think we're just talking about numbers of people and lives, but it's so much deeper than that. And that's why it's been the preeminent issue within mm-hmm. the church for so long. So let's talk a little bit more about your book. Two elements that really stand out to me, Father, in a time when people are so afraid during this election, there's a lot of anxiety and animosity. You emphasize first and foremost how nothing is impossible with God, and you repeat
right.
the message of the angel right. Gabriel.
So,
why is this important?
Well, because Jesus Christ has triumphed over death, and he's risen from the dead. So no matter what happens on election day, we're going to get up the next morning as Christians, as Catholics, and still sing Alleluia. Right? We're playing out history in our time, our real time, but eternity is so much beyond that, and it's already the conclusion, the final victory has already been won. We're just playing out our part. So Christians are always joyful and hopeful no matter what the situation. And our wise were our founding fathers who put upon our currency, in God we trust. You know, we don't trust in Congress. We don't trust in the Senate. We don't trust in the President. We don't trust in the Supreme Court of the United States. We don't trust in the federal departments. We are grateful for the service that they can offer, but then again, we recognize they're only human. In God we trust. And mm-hmm. so no matter what happens in the election, we should always be joyful and hopeful and cheerful, sowers of peace and joy who try to light up the pathways of this earth with our faith and with our joy.
Amen. We're talking about Father Rocky's book, Vote Your Conscience. It's available as a free ebook at relevantradio.com/vote. Father Rocky, kind of segueing in that same area, I think of some of the challenges we've faced in the last 20 years with various people elected and issues, especially relating to human life and abortion that have been voted in. And, you know, no matter the outcome of this election, no matter the outcome, great conversions can take place within the hearts and minds of individuals. I think of people today I know who, in the face of a radically pro-abortion President Barack Obama, it inspired them to speak up on difficult moral issues. It inspired them to dive deeper into their faith. And so this is where we're reminded to have hope, even in the face of things that we might be afraid that could happen in this coming election.
Right, right. And, you know, there's always many issues out there in every campaign, and we're all aware of so many of them. Some might be more important to us now than others, you know, in terms of state income tax and what that does to business and all the rest. But if we approach things logically and hierarchically, you know, we're going to really rally for the defense of the unborn. So what I lead people through in this book is really kind of a handbook of forming our conscience. It's not enough to follow your conscience. You have to have a well-formed conscience. We need to pay attention to the words of Jesus. And that's why I like to pass along something I learned from a book that I read years ago called The Faith Explained by Father Leo Trezzi, where he's speaking about sanctifying grace in the soul. And he said, the wise person will never make an important decision if they're not in the state of grace. Mm. Right? So the one of the best ways for people to prepare to go to the voting booth is to go make a good confession, right? And ask God for that wisdom and that humility to listen to the voice of the Lord. I always think of the words of Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew, whatever you did to the least of my brethren, that's what you did unto me. Whatever you did to the least of my brethren, that's what you did unto me. So I walk them through that, forming the conscience. You know, your conscience can be true or false, can be right or wrong. Well, we want a true conscience, a right conscience. So we want a conscience which is convicted. We need to know the Ten Commandments. We're really blessed in the Catholic Church that not only do we have the Ten Commandments, we've got an entire section of the Catechism of the Catholic Church that explains all of that. Yes. Explains what the fifth commandment is, not to kill. Part of that injunction is that we have to take care of our own health, our bodily health, right? And mm-hmm. I know you know all about that because you do this thing called Pilates, right?
Yes.
And I finally got the word right. And I call yes. it, I was saying, what is Pilates all about? And she's, oh, Father, you just roll your eyes. You know,
Father, you know, one of the things that stands out to me in your book as well is where you emphasize prudence. And we did a whole show talking a lot about prudence the other day. And it's this rational consideration over arbitrary emotion-driven action. And I think that that's so important to remember in the face of the atmosphere that we're in right now, for virtue to be our guide during this season. And it falls into understanding why we're made in God's image and likeness. We have intellect and yep. free will, and we can vote for whoever we want. But mm-hmm. is that the best choice? What is right? What will do the most good in society?
Right. And, you know, there's always a bit of a guess there, but sometimes things are much clearer than others. This is what I suggest for people to exercise the virtue of prudence. And it doesn't only deal with voting, right? Because during the course of our life, we're going to be faced with difficult decisions. Prudence takes time. Mm-hmm. I think in difficult decisions, prudence also takes a pen and a paper to write down, okay, what are the facts? What do you know for sure? And then there's a hierarchy of goods. What's most important? And then you follow down the line, right? And so there's something that usually can clarify our mind and all that. So in the case of Saint Joseph, he was a very prudent man. He woke up in the middle of the night because he had a dream. And in that dream, an angel said, you better get out of here, take Mary and the baby, because Herod wants to kill the baby. So he wakes up from the dream and he's got to think, all right, was that a bad dream? Was I imagining? Was that really an angel? Being a prudent man, he thought, Herod, yeah, everybody knows he's crazy. He's a maniac and he's insecure. He could do something like that. He could actually kill the kids. And, well, those three kings were here. Everybody had to see them. But the whole town is talking about them. Everybody's expecting a Messiah. Oh, my goodness. We got to get out of here. All right. So he has to make that decision himself. And I'm sure it was very methodical. There wasn't a knee-jerk reaction. He said, Mary, grab the baby. And Our Lady probably said, what else should we get? Well, grab the gold. Forget about the incense. Forget about the myrrh. We're out of here. All right. And he's a prudent man who took courageous action. So he had to figure out what's most important. He knew one thing. I got to take care of that child. I've got to protect the child.
That's Father Rocky, our executive director here on Relevant Radio. Vote Your Conscience is his new ebook, and it's free. All you have to do is head over to relevantradio.com/vote or sign up on the Relevant Radio app. Join me tomorrow for a unique conversation. My husband is actually going to sit down with me, and we're going to be talking about Saint Joseph, who we just mentioned.